Hello, everybody. This is the Christian Contrarian. I'm Gary Wayne, author of the Genesis 6 Conspiracy. And today's topic is Nimrod. Nimrod was a very interesting figure that comes out of the book of Genesis and prehistory and just after the flood. And what we're going to discuss today is what is Nimrod's connection to the prophetic empires of Daniel 2, Daniel 7, Daniel 8, Revelation 13, and Revelation 17. And why it's important to understand exactly who Nimrod was so that we can understand the prophetic allegory that's embedded into these prophetic empires so that we may understand exactly what is going to happen in the end time. So we're going to talk a little bit about who Nimrod is today. And the first thing that we need to know about Nimrod is that he's the son of Cush. And he's the son of Cush who became a mighty one. Mighty one in this case goes back to the word Gibberim, H1368. And Gibberim is a word that is often used for describing Nephilim or Rephaim or giants, but not always. Sometimes the word Gibberim, and it's used 158 times in the Old Testament, is used to describe angels, the strength of God, the power of God, and sometimes for just human beings, like some of David's mighty men, or in the book of Ruth, where mighty one is also used in terms of a human being. So when we look at the word Gibberim or mighty one, as it's recorded in Genesis 10 about Nimrod, we need to understand the narrative and the passage and the context so that we use the right application. And in this case, it's not clear that this is describing Nimrod as Nephilim or Rephaim. And indeed, Nephilim and Rephaim tend to come from a male fallen angel and a human female. And clearly in Genesis 10, we're told about Nimrod, who is the son of Cush. Now, we don't know who Cush's wife was to bear Nimrod, but that is not a male patriarch. It doesn't mean that it couldn't have been a fallen angel in a female form, but we're not told that. So anything beyond that he became a Gibberim is speculation. And what's interesting about the word became is it goes back to the Hebrew chalal, which means to break a vow, to break his word, to break a covenant. And it seems that Nimrod was one of the leaders of the early post-diluvian world, and this all happens within 100 years of the flood, and that somehow he breaks his vow to God and goes in a completely different direction. And this is how Nimrod now becomes connected to the Babel story. Babel story takes place in chapter 11, and the Nimrod accounting as to who he was and where he comes from comes in Genesis chapter 10. And it also says in Genesis 10 that Nimrod's empire consisted of Babel and Erech, which is a transliteration for Uruk out of Sumeria, and Calno, which is in Shinar. And Shinar is a transliteration for Sumer, as we've covered in past shows. And Uruk in Babylon, or Babel as it's described, and where it was located in Shinar is very close to Ur, where Abraham will come out of and into the land of the covenant, into Canaan, from a city called Ur. And it's all part of these Sumerian cities that again repopulate after the flood. So it's important to understand, because this is going to come up again in Abraham's time, these connections. So let's have a closer look at who Nimrod is and his kingdoms, and how we need to understand the Babel story in context with Revelation 13 and 17 in the prophetic empires. So Nimrod, who is the one that is the founder of Babel, is the one who leads the rebellion against God in Genesis 11 at the Babel city and tower and the construction thereof. And in this rebellion, he becomes a Gibberim, like a Nephilim, probably modeling himself after a Nephilim, and certainly ran a similar type of government. And he introduces the mystical religion, which is the religion of the antediluvian Nephilim, as we've covered in past episodes. And so this is now an antichrist type figure that holds universal sway over the descendants of Noah with a universal religion that's imposed, and he has usurped a government. So there's an allegory and a story and a narrative that is going to move forward as we move into Babylon and Babel of the end time. So if we understand that Nimrod is sort of the root of this whole idea of rebellion that takes place in the end time, which his rebellion takes place within 100 years of the flood, then what he does after Babel and the extended circumstances and consequences of what he does that reaches far into the future and into the end time starts to make a little bit more sense. So if we look at what happens after Babel and the dispersion of the languages, we essentially have two major pillars of civilization taking place. And yes, there's a dispersion everywhere, but the two powers that rise the highest are the Egyptian Empire, which seems to get its roots first, and with Mizraim and likely taking the mystical religion with them, because it's the same religion of Babel and of Nimrod in Chaldea after Babel. They tend to gain power and set up their empire first, and is likely the first of the seven empires in one of the ways of understanding Revelation 17 of the seven empires that came before Antichrist comes, because he's going to be the eighth empire, is the first empire in there. And although you can also make that connection, and I think it's also a dual meaning coming out of Daniel 8, I think this is also part of the understanding of Revelation 17 in the seven empires. And so Nimrod doesn't leave Shinar or Sumer, and he stays in Chaldea. So Chaldea is in Sumer, and Chaldea is another name for Babylon, just so that people can kind of understand the geography. And this is the eastern segment of civilization and east of the covenant land, and certainly quite a bit east of Egypt. And they become known as the Eastern people, which is a term that I'm going to come back to, because it's an important term in understanding the players of prophecy and the players of prehistory. And so in Genesis 10, we understand that Nimrod, you know, first builds Babel, which is in Shinar, and Akkad, and Erech or Uruk and Babel. And the Akkadian people are who Sargon comes out of, and it's a significant empire that is sort of first kind of recorded in secular history as being one of the more powerful empires next to Egypt. And I'm going to connect that back in just a second. But understand, the start is Nimrod. And out of Shinar comes, and Nimrod, out of Shinar and Nimrod comes Asher in verse 11 in Genesis 10, which is a very interesting term. So what it's saying is Asher, who is the second son of Shem, is going to inherit or succeed the Nimrod initial empire. And what Asher does next is he builds Nineveh, Rezin, and Calah, all in Assyria. And so this Akkadian empire fades away to the Assyrian empire, and all of it is coming out of the building blocks that Nimrod initially had started in Chaldea. And what's important about that is Assyria is Empire 2 on the first understanding of the seven empires that Babylon rides in Revelation 17. And so Assyria is one of the most wicked empires of all time. And it'll also have some allegorical overlays onto Babylon, but we're not going to get into that today. But understand, Egypt and Assyria would be the first two empires that are not recorded in the Daniel prophecies, but are the two that are sort of left off the edge in the Revelation 17, and or again with that dual application in Daniel 8 as being Alexander, his four empires, and then Rome, and then the end time Roman Empire, numbering 7 as well. And both are important to overlay in the understanding of the end time empire. And so we have this Assyrian empire that is called in Micah 5:6 as confirmation of where the history and the legacy and the organizational structure is coming from and is important to understand in the context of the prehistory and going forward into prophecy. Comes out of Micah 5:6 as Assyria being the land of Nimrod. And so all of Micah is doing is sort of just underlining with the reader in the Old Testament that Assyria, the second main great empire of the post-Diluvian world, is actually a Nimrodian empire. It comes out of that, but not Nimrod alone, but Nimrod as a major, major part of the post-Diluvian empires. And so Nimrod's original empire, if you want to look at it sort of geographically, it would have included Sumer, which is Shinar. It would include Chaldea, which is Babylon. It would have included Akkadia, which was, you know, the first secular sort of recording of a major empire coming out of Mesopotamia. And it would have included Assyria. And it also includes the area of Persia or Iraq and Iran, known biblically as Elam. And of course, all of these names, as people are, as you are familiar with prophecy, understand, is they all have end time prophetic connections that I'll touch on in a few minutes. So this is the basis for the empires coming out of the Middle East. And these are the sort of what are known as the Oriental Empires. So if you hear that term, it's not necessarily at this point in time the Chinese, but it's the Eastern people. And just as Egypt was sort of the Western outpost of the empire, as Kush is also referred to, of reflecting of the known world of that time. And so when we start to look at how this empire is building in Mesopotamia, it all comes together with the powerful Assyrian Empire. But before that, we get an indication of what is propelling this empire in Genesis 14. So just a couple short chapters after Babel, in chapter 11, comes Genesis 14 in what I call the war against giants, where you have the eastern kings coming in, and they're warring against all of the giants of the covenant land, the Rephaim, the Horim, the Amalekim, and the Avim, and the Emim, and all these different names of giants. But what a lot of people tend to overlook is that the Eastern people are also made up of giants. And they have, leading them, four kings that all have interesting connections that interweave here. So when we look at the War of Giants, the first king I'm going to talk about that comes out of the east is Amraphel. And he comes from Shinar, or Sumer. So again, the same area where Nimrod came along. What's interesting about Amraphel is it has Rapha and El right into the name, and it's of a foreign origination, so we don't really get a complete meaning to it, but I can't help but notice Rapha, as in Raphaim, in El, as being part of the whole name. And I think it has a meaning that this is likely a Raphaim king, and an early Raphaim king that is controlling Shinar, where Nimrod lived. And again, I'm going to come back to that in a second. We also have Arioch. And Arioch is from Babylon. So maybe not quite the same location as where Babel was located, but still in the same Mesopotamian sort of region overall. And Arioch is defined as lion-like, which is, again, very, very interesting when we look at different kinds of Nephilim that I talked about in a previous show, where you have the linemen of Moab and the linemen of Gad, and these beings tend to be warrior beings as well, and seem to be a kind of Nephilim. Just as the Nephilim were serpent-like giants, you have these lion men documented all over the eastern Mesopotamia and into Egypt and into other areas. And again, I have an interesting document. If you want to get a hold of me for the lion men, as I do on Nimrod, and I'll send that to you. Just get a hold of me through the Genesis6conspiracy.com, and I have an email on there. Get a hold of me and I'll send you those documents. But understand that this is another interesting king who has a Nephilim connections. And then you have Tidal, or Tidal, T-I-D-A-L, who is a Canaanite king that obviously has moved there. And of course, Canaan and Bashan is the home of the Rephaim and all the different names of the giants that go back to Rephaim, just as Abim and Anakim are all vernacular names for Rephaim. Deuteronomy 2 details that for you if you want to go read Deuteronomy 2. And he is known as the King of Nations. So it says clearly in Genesis 14, he's the King of Nations. So this is a very powerful king. And Tidal is defined as fear or dreadful or terror, just as other Rephaim names have similar types of meanings that describes their powerful and how awful they were to look on, and their size and their warrior capabilities. And then they're led by King Chedorlaomer, and he is from Elam or Persia. And Chedorlaomer is the king that in many records says that he overthrew the Nimrodian influence and rebelled successfully and becomes the leader of the Mesopotamian region. And he is now leading this four-king alliance, three of them which are clearly, at least from a conjecture and connect-the-dots basis, clearly, in my opinion, Rephaim kings. So, and I'm going to come back to this in a second and connect that a little bit tighter. And they're going to war against other giants. So you have this war that's going on between the giants very early in the post-Diluvian world that Abraham now becomes involved in. And half of them are coming from this conglomeration of Nimrodian influence and intermarried peoples. And it seems to be one of these, you know, balance of power wars that goes on throughout history. And these are, I think, what is being referred to, the Eastern people are referred to in Genesis 15, where it talks about Rephaim and Rephaim hybrid peoples that are occupying the giant land, but the covenant land. It's their land at that time that Abraham has moved into, but it's the land that's being promised to Abraham. And this is the land that is described from Egypt to the Euphrates, so right into Mesopotamia. And one of those peoples is called the Kadamites, which is the Kadami or the Kadamaim. And they are defined as the eastern people. And I think these are the Rephaim people that had moved into the Mesopotamian region originally as the Eastern people, the Oriental people, and they're known as an ancient race, as we've described in other shows. And again, I have a document on the KKK where the Kadamites are included in, so get a hold of me if you want that. But understand that this is now the people that Nimrod, who stayed in Shinar, stayed in Sumer, is the founder of these empires that are coming out of the Middle East. He is now marrying into the Kadamites, the Rephaim, and the Aryans, as they're known in secular history, or the Marianu, who come down from the north or from the covenant of the land, and there's a couple different variations on that, and will set up the Mitanni dynasty and intermarry with the Hittites and intermarry with the Amalekim and even into the Egyptian dynasty as well. So what you have is now all of the main players coming out of the Middle East who are intermarrying into the Rephaim bloodlines. But in this case, you have Nimrod, who starts the rebellion at Babel, also intermarrying with them. And I think this is where he further becomes a Gibborim or a mighty one and takes on their gods, takes on the persona of their gods, and intermarries with Nephilim and produces offspring that are hybrids, which is likely why we don't have any of his offspring listed in the Table of Nations, which is common for people who have children that are offspring of the Rephaim. And so I think he intermarried into the Kadmonites. And then when we look at after the first two empires that I talked about in terms of Revelation 17, the seven empires, I already talked about Egypt and Assyria and where Assyria comes from. But when we get into Daniel, we get Persia and Babylon. And again, these are the kingdoms that are coming out of Assyria and Nimrod before that. So Persia and Babylon is just an extension of the Nimrod Empire, part of the Metallic dynasties and the Beast dynasties that are going to be very important in understanding the allegory for the end time empires. And then what comes after that is Greece and Rome. And again, I want to go back to and these Greek and Roman empires are the ones that are going to produce the European dynasties and royal families that we know of today. And so you get this progression out of Mesopotamia and all through Europe that are going to play a very important role in their bloodlines as descendants of the Rephaim, descendants of these kings that come out of the covenant land, and particularly out of the Mesopotamia region that are grafted into the dynasties of Europe that have held so much power over the last 1,000 years or so. And Elam is very important to understand as part of this, because this is Persia. Elam is the Persian Empire, at least from a descendancy perspective and from a prophetic allegorical perspective. So when you hear prophecy about Elam, understand it's talking about Persia. And if we look to the end time, there's several prophecies about Persia and there's prophecies about Elam. So these people are going to be recognized and dealt with in the end time. And Persia is the name used in the War of the Gog War, Joel 1 and 2 and Revelation 9, as you get towards the midpoint of the last 7 years, and that will be Elam, Iraq and Iran as they come together. And so when we look at now Nimrod, we start to look at how understanding who he is starts to reach down through the generations as an archetypical Antichrist figure, an empire creator figure, and an allegorical figure that we need to understand the empires from, and particularly as we take that into the end times. So when we get into Revelation 13 and the end time empire that it talks about will have all of the traits of the four beast empires that is described in Daniel 7. And it's the same empires that are described in Daniel 2, the same four that include Babylon, Persia, Greece, Rome. You have the two before, and then you have the end time Roman Empire that's going to come before Antichrist comes. And so these empires will have a historical and an allegorical connection back to Nimrod and those four empires that Nimrod that comes out of Nimrod as it moves forward into the empires. And Revelation 17 talks about how the Babel religion rides on these seven empires. So if you go back to Babel that we talked about earlier in the show, there's an organizational structure that's set up, and it's the same organizational structure that was set up in the antediluvian world that brought the first apocalypse by water. And this is the same organizational structure when it's permitted to come together on a worldwide basis will cause the apocalypse of fire, the end time. And so the organizational structure is giant or Rephaim or Nephilim kingships and bloodlines and dynasties that are dominated and controlled by the mystery religion. And the mystery religion is called Babylon, which is rooted in the word Babel and the religion that Nimrod sets up at Babel Tower and Babel City and rebels against God, just as the end time is a rebellion against God, a rendezvous with destiny that these spurious forces want to have so that they can try and win their freedom away from God. This is the same religion that is Enochian mysticism that was before the flood. This is the religion that the polytheists believe that Hermes delivered to Nimrod with all of the knowledge of the antediluvian epoch and the religion that he now institutes at Babel and begins to build the city and the tower as the first part of the manifestation of some of this knowledge. And when we look at the knowledge that these seven sciences had in the antediluvian world, the seven sacred sciences, as they like to call them in secret societies, which is known as the seven liberal sciences today, reinstituted by in the West by the Royal Society, which was created by Rosicrucians and Freemasons in 1660, which is no coincidence. This is the religion of Enoch that married up with the illicit knowledge of heaven before the flood. And it accelerated to the knowledge that may have surpassed what we have today. I also think this is what is going on today, that we are also receiving additional knowledge and information to accelerate the knowledge that will bring on end time Babylon, end time government, and then Antichrist to take the stand to try and develop the technology and the weapons to actually convince people they can win against God. We know the end of that story in Revelation 19, but they firmly believe that they can make a stand against God and successfully win. And so this is the religion that comes out of the antediluvian epoch, which is so appropriate, so that you're going to have the same type of organizational structure happen over and over and over throughout history, from the antediluvian period before the flood, at Babel, all through the empires that rise, all have the same organizational structure, just as the 10-king empire that Babylon rides, that comes up in the last 7 years, that a rising unknown Antichrist figure, the new Nimrod, will negotiate, will establish the revived Roman Empire, and Babel as a religion that is going to dominate that end time empire for the first 3.5 years until Antichrist is crowned king and then destroys Babylon, as recorded in Revelation 17 and Jeremiah 51 and elsewhere in the Bible. And so this will be the Babylon religion of Babel. But just as Babel was a city, so will Babylon be a city. So we need to be looking for a city. And just as the mystery religion gave Nimrod the power and controlled the kingship, this will control the 10 kings, and Babel will come first. And without Babel, you do not get the world empire. And that's why they will become subservient to Babel for the first 3.5 years, but then grow jealous because of the power and the wealth that Babel is taking out of the empire by taxing or taking a tribute off of every transaction that takes place in the world. So it's a city of commerce as well. So it's all of this. So we need to understand Nimrod's empire, the organizational structure, and the mystical religion, where it all comes from, what it means, because it's all going to be cloaked as a religion and a world of light, a new age where we're promised to evolve into gods, but none of it will be true. It's all designed to deceive people and deceive the elect, even if that were possible, complete with a false Armageddon, which Antichrist will take over and usurp as his coming, as Jesus does in the end times. So everything is a counterfeit. That's the key thing to remember, and everything can be defined because nothing is new under the sun as to what happened in prehistory and when we get into the allegories and understanding the empires. So if you want any information on what we talked about today, whether or not it's the lion men or whether or not it's on Babel or the mighty men of the end time any of the things that we talked about today, get a hold of me. The KKK was another one I think that I mentioned earlier on. Get a hold of me through my website, thegenesis6conspiracy.com. That's Genesis 6, the number 6, conspiracy.com, or through my Facebook timeline, or message me on Facebook under Gary Wayne, or under Twitter at GaryWayne63, at GaryWayne63. Thank you, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.